The Ira Kaufman Podcast is presented by Bill Curry Ford, 1 mile north of the stadium on Dale Mabry Highway. Bill Curry Ford since 1960. Get to BillCurryFord.com right now. So many fantastic offers, but many of them end on Monday, February 3rd. So get there today, BillCurryFord.com. Check them out. They'll have what you need. And of course, they've got a tremendous used vehicle selection, BillCurryFord.com.
I don't like Dean when he's healthy.
Florida's Elite Restoration is your 24/7 resource when you have that disaster at your home or at your property. They'll tarp your roof. They'll handle water mitigation, fire situations. They're not the fire department, but full fire restoration, mold remediation. They're a licensed mold remediation specialist. More important, they are there for you 24/7, so you can call them. They will come out with the greatest and latest technology, evaluate your situation, your flood, whatever it is, and they'll talk to you about proceeding, because you need someone to fight for you against the insurance companies to make sure you get the money that is coming to you. Florida's Elite Restoration gives you a free evaluation, and if you move forward with them, you've got the best in the business. Check out their Google reviews. They've got an Ira Kaufman discount. Just mention Ira or JoeBucksFan.com when you first call, and if you eventually need them, you'll get $500 back, cash back, or money for your deductible. Florida's Elite Restoration, they serve across the state, not just the Tampa Bay area. They're family-owned. Owner Josh Martin, big Bucks fan. And just remember, you need somebody in your corner, and you certainly need to be smart and get that free evaluation when you have a significant disaster at your property. Florida'sElitereStoration.com.
Told the guy, wherever you're getting this bread, don't change a thing.
Buccaneers fans, here he is, the sage of Tampa Bay sports. We're in the Bill Curry Ford Studios, Ira. You are the king of Newport Richey, Uncle Ira, the custodian of Canton. What else are you, Ira?
The water whisperer.
The water damage whisperer. There you go. A nod to our friends at Florida's Elite Restoration. I'm Steve Isbitz of JoeBucksFan.com. Lee DeCamper's here. And our special guest today, Sean Sullivan, our JoeBucksFan.com draft guru, is here.
I'm afraid to tell Sean that I'm going to Indy for the combine in late February, because he'd probably want to hitch a ride with me and get up there and see these guys in action. He already knows a lot about these prospects. And he's dying to see one work out right in front of him.
I can just see the two of you in your cherry red Ford Escape heading north. It'd be fantastic time. So it's early for draft talk, but I guess in some ways it's never early for draft talk. We're going to get to Sean about some of the prospects that he's excited about for the Bucks on this very, very early stage. And we may even talk edge rusher. I've taken the sharp objects away from Lee.
He's working with the Bucks having the 19th pick, and he's not dismayed about it. He thinks he's got some people to take.
So, Ira, I put something on Twitter. I said, don't sleep on Nate Shielhouse, who is the play-calling whisperer for Sean McVay with the Rams. Other guys have held that role, Liam Cohen, Vikings coach Kevin O'Connell, others. And, Shielhouse was a quarterback at Illinois, and he coached Iowa State, was it, Lee?
And Michael Beck, local guy.
He called plays there, 34 years old, and somehow, think about it, McVay hires him out of Iowa State and immediately turns him into this, you're going to develop the game plan, and this was all put on video by ESPN, and he jumped right into that role, not even like a year to sort of get used to the system, put him right into it, and now he's interviewed with the Bucks, and interesting candidate, and frankly, a guy I think that might bond with Baker Mayfield more than others. Heard some really good things about him locally. What do you think of that?
The Bucks are certainly infatuated with the Sean McVay tree, which is growing rapidly. And may I say, Lee, that it extends far beyond the Bucks. Sean McVay's reputation as an offensive guru is widespread. Other teams are looking at his disciples. We saw how Liam Cohen worked out, calling plays for the first time. Spectacular. 29.5 points a game. Godwin only playing 7 games. Offense didn't miss much of a beat. Now comes the next guy down the line. Heck, I'm old enough to remember when Sean McVay came to one Buck place, and he was sort of a gopher for John Gruden. And so Gruden's very tight with McVay. Sean McVay's got a huge influence on the Buccaneers right now. It would surprise no one if this guy's the hire. No one.
Well, I like the Shielhouse. Like I've said before, my pipe dream was Lincoln Riley. I doubt that will happen, but does not mean I can't dream. I mean, I dream of Kate Upton. Am I going to get her? Hell no. But doesn't stop me from dreaming. I have weird dreams. Shielhouse, this is why I like him. I know it's college. Iowa State doesn't get blue chip recruits. They just don't. When he was wide receivers coach there, put a wide receiver in the NFL draft. When Shieldhouse was running backs coach, he developed David Montgomery, Breece Hall. His 1 year as offensive coordinator at Iowa State takes Rocco Becht, a freshman, freshman of the year in the Big 12. And that was still with Oklahoma and Texas in the conference. And those schools very much do get blue chip recruits.
That's Anthony Beck's son?
Yes, went to Wiregrass High School.
Former Bucks tight end.
Yes. So this guy, at least on a college level, has shown he can develop young kids to NFL talent. And then he goes to McVay. I don't know if you saw that video, Ira. I certainly did. I put it on JoeBucksFan.com. Steve saw it. It was eye-opening. Basically, this guy's in McVay's mind. McVay tells the guy, this is what I want in my game plan. Put it together on Tuesday night. And he puts it together per the whims of McVay. And then when the players come in Wednesday, they got their game plan for the week. The guys who held the same position that Shieldhouse has with the Rams, Steve already mentioned Liam Cohn, Zach Taylor, has something to do with Joe Burrow. I'm being sarcastic. Zach Robinson, who the jury is still out with Atlanta, but it seems like he's done a decent job with Penix. You know, very small sample size. You know, those guys have a track record. Shieldhouse had a track record when he got to Los Angeles. I like this. A documented resume of developing.
McVay doesn't want to lose this guy, Steve. He doesn't want to lose this guy.
Well, it's very interesting from the standpoint of the Jaguars interviewed him. You know, they can offer what they can offer, but they can't offer him calling plays. So it feels like the Bucs have some leverage there. I'm just intrigued that how does he go from that job at Iowa State right into the deepest end of the fire with all that trust from McVay right away? And it's very impressive when you think about it.
Don't underestimate the input of Baker Mayfield. And if he likes this guy, and Mayfield's got contacts in the Rams organization.
He's called McVay.
Yeah, and if he likes him, I think he's going to be the guy.
All right, Sage, look, I have to throw that out there. We talked about other names on the last podcast. You can find the podcasts at Apple Podcasts, Podbean, Podcast Addict, iHeartRadio as well.
And have you heard the name Bobby Slowick attached to any job search? I mean, it's amazing what goes on with some of these coordinators. Yeah, you have one mediocre year, and they turn on you in a hurry.
That's another reason why Cohn went bye-bye. You got to strike while the iron's hot.
Yeah.
Especially when $60 million is thrown in your face.
Sick of Cohn, Ira. Sick of that guy.
You know, and Stroud didn't have a bad year. I mean,
all right, enough of Stroud.
Yeah, we're now.
Enough of Stroud. All right, so Sage, I want to make sure we put that out
there. Well, which
Stroud
are we talking about?
There's only one Stroud I talk about.
Okay.
And he's a quarterback in the NFL.
So, Sage, enough of that, and let's just say hi to Sean first. Sean, you've been sitting very patiently. How are you?
Terrific. Thank you, Steve. It's always an honor to talk football, which is, you know, besides my family, my true love is football. And I hopefully will be able to attend the Combine this year, so I'm very excited about that. And
this is Sean's favorite time of year, Steve.
It really is.
It really is. He's the off-season master.
Saturday night, Senior Bowl. You lock yourself in your den, I'm guessing.
Well, don't forget East-West Shrine game tonight, and then you have the senior on Saturday, and you have some really great players on both sides. I think Shador Sanders at the East-West Shrine game, I thought was interesting, you know, as he could be the number one overall pick. Usually East-West Shrine game doesn't have the number one overall pick, so it's very exciting that these players are really understanding the marketing themselves and really getting out where before they were like, don't talk to me. They try to stay away from making a mistake or saying the wrong thing or doing the wrong thing. I love this new athlete. They get out on all their social media. He's saying, I want to be the number one pick. Let me throw. Let me talk to the coaches. Let me talk to the general managers. Let me get a comfort level with them. I love the exposure that we get now as a draft person, as opposed to 20 years ago when you couldn't get a word out of these guys.
I think a lot of the comfort comes from they already have $1 million in their pocket, $500,000, $3 million. They're much more confident.
That's a very good point.
If they screw up a little bit, it's not the end of the world. These guys think they're set for life already. It changes the whole dynamic.
Sure. I'm just curious about this real quick.
That's a wonderful point, Steve. Like, that's a really good point. I hadn't really considered the fact that how much the NIL changed the way a draft prospect could talk to general managers. He can pretty much lean back in the chair a little bit, and he doesn't have to worry about sending a steak back or something silly like that. For those of you who listened to the podcast for a long time, you guys can get the reference.
not just that, but unless I'm drafted second round, screw you guys. I'm staying in college. Pocket another $5 million.
You know, IMG Academy is a customer of Bill Curry Ford, and they have a lot of these prospects that are going to Florida, Florida State, Georgia. And it's really interesting when you talk to these guys. And one of the things that they said that really helped is that the NIL is doing a lot of great things for college football. And I'm thinking to myself, well, you know, I'm trying to get on which side I'm going to be on this because I really am in the middle. on this because you're I think kids should be taken care of, but they're also taken care of with a scholarship. And then I try to figure out is I don't like the portal where you can basically build a team in a year with someone else is recruiting somebody for 6 years and then you get them. But here's what he said. It's making kids stay in college longer.
It is.
It's better for the NFL game. And it's better me as someone who loves prospects. I get another year watching a quarterback like Carson Beck. He's going to Miami. Like I get to watch him develop and see what he becomes. You
like
know,
Bo Nix staying
around.
Some of
these guys left early for the NFL, and you never hear about them again, right?
Carson Beck interests more in his taste in women more than he does football.
It seems it always goes back to women with you.
See, that's a classic the Kemper line.
Yeah.
Sean.
So classic.
Sean, speaking of the Senior Bowl, Sean, in the last 5 years, say, when Jason Light turned the corner as a talent evaluator and hasn't looked back, who are some of the guys that come to your mind that use the Senior Bowl specifically with the Buccaneer brass and raise their stock to the point where that probably made the difference in the Bucs draft in them?
I look at the offensive lineman. It seems that he really likes the senior offensive lineman and some of our small school guys that we watched in the Senior Bowl. I wish he wouldn't watch some of the Ed Rushers at the Senior Bowl, but that's a whole longer podcast. But I think specifically he looks for these offensive linemen. He watches the practices. I don't even know if he watches the Senior Bowl as a game because I don't know if the game if the game really offers you anything right now. But if you watch like the practices, I think he's pulling some of these gems out of that. But I don't think it's just that game. I think it's all the All-Star games that he's watching the practices on, and even some of these pro days where he's breaking down. I think he's making decisions so early on that this is a guy that he likes and this is a guy he doesn't like. I think he was on Ali Marpet so fast. You know, I think that he really bought into Ali Marpet and Kappa.
Regardless of
the competition and Kappa, who has had a really nice career, actually.
What do you think made the difference in Buck Irving becoming a Buck? What was the critical moment there?
I think it's an interview process. So I get emails from people who listen to my podcast all the time, and I love how they hold you accountable for, like the Gross Matos of the world who's had, an average career, and I thought he was going to be much better. Where I didn't get to meet him, right? So remember, I'm looking at just tape, and I'm looking at probably 50% of what he is and trying to project him into the NFL, where they get to meet him, talk to his coaches, find out if he's early or late to practice, find out what his work ethic is. And I think with Bucky Irving, the reason why I wasn't as high on Bucky Irving as I was, say, Ray Davis, was because of the physical style that Ray Davis runs. And I like that style. I didn't get to see that with Bucky Irving because the offense that he ran through holes that were 4 feet wide. And you're going, okay, well, the Oregon's offense, you know, was spread, a lot of bubble screens.
Right.
You didn't get to really see him other than he makes the first guy miss. But how is he going to be after contact? And then he gets into the NFL, and you're like, okay, he's the second best running back against contact in the NFL, yards after contact. And you're like, okay, where is this coming from? Because he's a small stature guy. Well, if I got to meet him, which I have met him since he's been a Buccaneer, but if I got to meet him prior to the draft and I got to see this guy's size of his heart, and the chip that he plays with on his shoulder, I would be like, okay, I'm going to raise him up a little bit because he's obviously playing with a lot of anger. Like, he runs angry.
Yeah.
And I love that about
like
him.
Like a Pacheco, but he's more talented than Pacheco.
but coming from my perspective,
30.
I'm not going to see that on tape. That's something I need to sit across from him and just look at him and say, this guy is a warrior.
Like he's a warrior.
And
look
by the way,
him.
Sean, to be fair.
And his Cuban sandwich.
Joke. That guy, no joke, Bucky Irving is a warrior. That he plays through pain. He's the smallest guy in the field. If we had bigger guys with the heart that guy has, the team would be unstoppable.
To be fair to Sean Sullivan, Ray Davis, he's a good football player. He's a good football player. He doesn't get a lot of carries behind James
he's
Cook.
He's behind a Pro Bowl running back. Yeah.
But when he gets the ball, he's good.
Yeah,
not a bum.
He started one game this season when Cook was injured, and he had the rookie line of scrimmage record at 176 yards from line of scrimmage, and then Bucky Irving was number two, and then Bucky Irving broke it against San Diego. So I thought that was kind of interesting, is their names were still linked because they were 1 and 2 in rookie yards from line of scrimmage.
Ira, is this the year, one of your favorite subjects of all time, is this the year that the Buccaneers decide we're going to have a legitimate backup quarterback in here that can get some things done? Now, there's a long list of veteran quarterbacks that have won a lot of games. It's a super long list this year. No one's going to go crazy about it. From Cooper Rush, who's been a successful backup, to Garoppolo, who played with the Rams, knows the system, and he played cheap last year.
The Chiefs picked up Carson Wentz last year. These guys are around.
You still got Flacco and Heinicke and Andy Dalton who wins games. It's a long, long, long list.
Tyrod Taylor in there in the mix somewhere.
So they're going to come. Yeah. They're going to come cheap.
It used to be a pet peeve of mine, Sean, because I always just talk about the backup quarterback. Now, having said that, and I don't want to jinx the Bucks, Sean, because you're still pissed off at me when I said a couple of years ago that Buck fans aren't going to want to hear this, but you've been very fortunate over the last 3 or 4 years on the injury front. That wasn't the case in 2024. They got hit hard, starting with Godwin. It was a bad one. And the secondary, in shambles, no question about it. But having said that, Sean, they have not lost a quarterback for a single game, the starting quarterback, due to injury, not suspension, since like 2017. That's a long, long stretch. So whether it was Jameis Winston, not through injury, Brady, and now Mayfield, they start all 17 games, or 16 back when Winston was playing. Very, very rare. So it hasn't been an issue on the front burner for Buck fans. It hasn't been. But Sean, you know better than anybody. Can you really expect your quarterback to play 17 games in this league? I'd like to see a backup with some experience.
Ira will not sleep. He will not rest well until Joe Flacco is with the Bucs.
I agree with you that Baker Mayfield, the way he plays the game, the likelihood of him starting 17 games next year is probably not good.
We're not talking about a catastrophic injury. No. We're talking about a three-week injury.
He's not going to change his style of play. This way in Cleveland. He played with a separated shoulder. If you guys didn't hear my take on Baker Mayfield not making the starting Pro Bowl, I was very upset about it. I did a rant on it.
It was fantastic. I applauded. And that was on your Best in Class podcast that people can subscribe to at Apple Podcasts or just see it at joebucksfan.com.
I got a lot of people said they really enjoyed the rant, and I'm like, that came from the heart. I was really upset because this guy has thrown for more yards and more touchdowns the last 2 years than any quarterback in the NFL. How is he not a top five quarterback in the NFC? I don't understand what.
Well, then there's Levante David every year.
There's just so much bias. I don't know if it's. I don't think it's just about Tampa because we've had some amazing players that get recognized from day one. Tristan Wirfs is a recognized player. Mike Evans is recognized all around the NFL. Warren Sapp from day one was Derek Brooks day one.
Well, you're talking about no doubt about a Hall of Famers, and people would be complete asswipes for leaving those out.
I was just saying from it didn't take a lot to get publicity for those guys.
No, because they're that good.
You got a guy that has led the NFL. So if you had an edge rusher that led the NFL in sacks 2 years in a row, he would be a household name.
Yeah.
Right? You have a quarterback that has passed for over 70%, the most yards in the NFL, and the most touchdowns in the NFL, and it's not close. It's not even close. He has dominated the NFL for two seasons with two different offensive coordinators.
He's fighting his past reputation.
With injuries to his top-performing wide receivers.
Oh, you're preaching to the choir.
And this guy has to be an alternate?
Well, this is why I've said last year, Mayfield is going to have 3 years like this, back to back to back. He's got this scarlet letter on his chest for whatever reason. People are still pissed off by him planting a flag in Columbus back in college. They didn't like him when he was in Cleveland. And to this day, when people write something good about him, you can read between the lines like, there's just this bias against him. I don't know what it is. And I said this, do you guys remember? Last year I was saying it would take Mayfield 3 straight years of stellar football to change people's minds on him. He's still looked at as the scrub with the Panthers.
I think that signing Baker Mayfield to a $3 or $4 million contract and then turning him into a franchise quarterback with a very little investment might be one of the greatest moves in Buccaneers history. And that includes
right there was stealing JPP.
I'm glad you mentioned
Tom
that.
Brady. I agree with the Tom Brady signing, but it was Tom Brady. That's kind of a no brainer. This was think about what he's playing for right now.
Right.
Well, still it's a bargain.
Hold on.
Yeah.
So this is important because his current price speaks to the Bucs have a window to win right now.
Right now.
Right now. Because you got a cheap quarterback playing for $20 million less than the top 10 paid quarterback guys.
Year,
you still got Mike Evans. It's got to be this year.
Yep.
We know the Bucs feel very strongly, and how couldn't they? They just won the division by 2 games. So, Lee, you just told me before the podcast that Jeremy Fowler had something to say about Chris Godwin. What is that?
Allegedly. Yeah, who knows who Jeremy Fowler was talking to, but he's pretty credible. Executives around the NFL expect the Bucs to make a run at him, try to sign him.
I think Godwin's going to be a Buck in 25. Now, I'm in a fantasy league with Sean Sullivan. And
what's her name?
Jared Goff was my quarterback, and I took him earlier than I should have. And he had a good season. But, Sean, I don't think it's a stretch whatsoever. And I watch Goff every week very closely. I think Mayfield had a better season. I think Mayfield was better than Goff. Goff had a 5-interception game. Goff had a couple of really bad games. I don't think Mayfield had 3 or 4 shaky games. I think the Denver game was a bad game all around.
I don't remember Goff having a problem at wide receiver this year or at tight end. And Baker Mayfield was without Mike Evans.
A better team around Goff, for sure. Better
yeah,
team
I think, so. Yeah. For, I think yeah. so. I'm not even talking about the – I'm just talking about the weapons that you get
sure.
to throw to.
Sure,
Baker Mayfield threw to guys that were not household names.
Better backfield, too.
They signed a guy off the street with Shepard, and then he made Shepard into a viable receiver. He took a rookie out of Washington that everybody, you know, was – this is a guy that's probably going to be a 3 or 4, made him into a 2 basically when Godwin got hurt. He had a 7-touchdown run, you know, a 7-touchdown.
That's right.
Hey, you don't have to sell me on Mayfield. I think he deserved the Pro Bowl. I just wouldn't have put him in over Goff necessarily. I don't think that's the example in the NFC.
So Daniels is an interesting case, Sean. You can't knock the year that Daniels had. You just can't. And considering he had no running game. They don't have a running back on that team. They don't have Bucky Irvin.
They had a really good running game the first part of the year before Brian Robinson got hurt.
Well, I just watched them in the last 2 months. They didn't run a lick, including against the Bucks in the playoff game.
I remember Eckler running and scoring a couple touchdowns.
Eckler's not the same player, Sean. Yeah. You know
Ira
that.
Godwin. Okay, so now you've already said what Jeremy Fowler said. Big deal. You've said it.
I have.
That you expect the Bucks to go after Godwin, and you know they'll have a line in the sand somewhere if it gets crazy.
He's not going to get crazy money, Sean. Chris Godwin coming off a dislocated ankle.
You don't think Cohen will throw money at him?
Not crazy money. He's never been a one. He's never been a one. And there is a difference.
But he's been paid as a one.
Listen, you have a team like San Diego Chargers that would kill for somebody like Godwin to add to that.
To go with McConkey.
Playoff team.
The Spanos clan is going to do something smart.
You have teams out there that would give anything to have Godwin on the team. Ooh. But I think if this is our year, no one knows how healthy the guy is except for the Bucks.
It's true. They have the intel.
Other teams aren't going to know how healthy he is.
Yeah, they have the best intel.
Right, so we're going to have the best opportunity to sign him, in my opinion, right off the bat. Because other teams are probably going to be a little more wary of his injury. He's had an injury history.
Now he's going to be 29, so maybe old age is catching up to him.
Here's where it gets very messy. Free agency dinner bell rings, whatever it is, March 10th. It opens up. So if he's not fully healthy on March 10th, then the Bucks don't really know where he is. They know his path to recovery, and they've been monitoring and helping him, but they don't really know. Suppose some team comes in and says, we don't need to see it, Chris. We're going to bet on you. And the Bucks don't even know what they're betting on other than the man. That's right. Where it gets dicey, because somebody can call him up on the 10th and say, this is what we got a 3-year deal for.
I don't think a team will do that without a full medical update.
I'm going to say I think we're going to have the best chance to sign him. If the Bucks want to sign him, they're going to sign him.
Sure.
And to Steve's point, this is the year. We're going to go into this year with a salary cap that's better. After the Brady era, we're going to be in better shape with dead cap money this year. We're going to have some money to spend.
Here's the linebacker I've had my eye on since he came out of college. He's with your Chiefs.
Nick Bolton. He's a good player.
Now, I don't know
he's
what the Chiefs...
He's a linebacker. We can't cover anybody.
I don't think he's good in coverage.
He's more run defense than anything.
You don't think he's good in coverage?
No, he's not known to be good in coverage.
Do you know how fast he was coming out of the...
Doesn't mean he can cover, though.
Hey, listen. Right now, we have guys that are running solid fives at linebacker right now, right? Okay, like, not even sub-fives, like solid fives.
Sean, this is something we've been debating here, especially me and Lee.
Oh, no.
True or false? Servassie Dennis has shown you enough in the flashes when he plays to think this guy might be a player if he can stay healthy. Do you like what you've seen from this guy?
You know what changed my mind on it was the tackle that he made on Jahmyr Gibbs in the Detroit Lions game where when we beat the Lions and when he was healthy.
Who tackles Gibbs in the open field?
Nobody.
Nobody.
He went all the way across the field. If you remember, it was 4th and 1 or 4th and 2. They tried to run an end around with Gibbs to the sideline.
On the other side of the field?
He ran all the way to the other side of the field and crunched him out of bounds. If you remember the play that I'm talking about, it changed the game, and that's the reason why the Bucks won that game, was that tackle. I thought when I saw that tackle, I think I even text Lee. I said, wow, that's an impressive tackle. The guy's got to stay healthy. If the guy's healthy, he's a player. You know, he played safety and linebacker in college, so obviously the guy can run, and he can hit, and he looks like an intelligent player, but he hasn't... we haven't seen enough of him.
Fair enough.
Right? So to Lee's point, Lee's like, hey, listen, the guy's not on the field. I can't evaluate a guy that's not on the field.
But he's not a bum. He's not a bum.
I think he could start for the Bucks, but I don't trust him. Just like I don't trust Jamel Dean. If you're considering that the Bucs are supposed to make a Super Bowl run next year. I can't bank on that guy starting.
I don't like Dean when he's healthy, Sean.
So I know Jamal Dean. He's just like one of the best guys.
He's awesome, dude.
I think the hardest part about you guys being journalists is you guys meet these guys and spend time with them and get to know them, and then you have to criticize them. Right, that's a really.
I don't have a problem with it.
He's
ruthless.
It's when you know that they're really trying. When you know that they're actually trying to be a good player for the Bucs, and you know that they're putting in the time and they're putting and they're really. You know, Jamal Dean worked on his body the whole off season. You know, like he looks like a football player, right? I mean, he really put the time in, and then he just continues to get hurt and hurt and hurt. It's just like one of those things where. But I personally think the problem with Jamal Dean is how we're. Doing our coverages. My personal opinion is we drafted a hands-on physical corner and we make him play zone.
We're playing to his limitations.
We literally played to the worst part of Jamal Dean. The best part of Jamal Dean, if you remember when he was drafted, we were laughing because he was getting pass interference calls because his long arms and hands were all over the receiver. They couldn't get away from him, if you remember. He was terrific as a man cover.
I got another question for Sean. Steve, this is a good one. Sean, you know Todd Bowles well over the years in terms of how he coaches. And I don't want to speak for you, but I think you were stunned and disappointed throughout the season about the style of defense, pass defense, that Todd Bowles asked the Bucs to play. Here's my question. If they fill in some of these pieces.
I wish we had a camera.
A corner, a linebacker, an edge rusher. With players that contribute significantly as rookies. Don't you think Bowles would change his coaching style? Or you think he's locked into playing soft coverage? That's Todd Bowles. He's not going to change. He's not going to be more aggressive if he had more players to bank on.
Well, Sean's thinking about that. When you were asking that question, he shook his head like his son told him he just wrecked the car.
I understand that. And now I'm very interested in his answer.
It's beyond frustrating, right? So do I think that he has forgotten how to coach a defense? No, I don't. Do I think that he adjusts well in game? I do not. And this has been my problem with Todd Bowles from the beginning is I am not an advocate to fire Todd Bowles. I'm not that guy. He is a steady force that has won while he's here. He's gotten better every year.
He has the respect of the room.
He has my
Before
respect.
Sean continues, I just want to say, if Sean was running the Bucs, Liam Cohen would still be the offensive coordinator. Now, go ahead.
I understand.
So I think my problem with him is I've never felt like he had a full understanding of momentum in a game. And I listened to your podcast. I listened to your podcast, and the best example is this. We can talk about the Detroit playoff game last year, but let's talk about a more recent game that you guys discussed on your last podcast was what do you do on that fourth down and three when he kicks the field goal in the Washington game when you hadn't forced a punt in the entire game? What made him think in that moment with 4 minutes left that he was going to be able to stop the Washington Redskins, or team formerly known as the Redskins? What made you think as a head coach? Because that's what I would like to ask Todd Bowles. Like, maybe I have a beer with them in Indianapolis and say, what on earth were you thinking? Or was that somebody in your ear telling you to kick the field goal? Was that somebody from upstairs saying,
ultimately, he's got to trust his defense. He's got to trust it.
Ira,
there's no way.
No, he does.
There's no way that he looked at that defense and said, a defense that played four quarters of football and didn't force a punt.
Lee knows what I'm going to say, but it has to be further clarified. So they stopped him twice on fourth down, but both times they were in field goal range, and a field goal in that situation that we're talking about would have lost the Bucs the game. So he had never stopped them in a situation that current situation was leading right to.
So what I was saying is that feel that I'm talking about. Most coaches, most really good coaches like Reed, like they have a feel for the game. Like I feel like sometimes I don't know who he's listening to in that thing. I don't know what they're telling him. I don't know if they're going over what computers tell you to do or whatever. I don't care about any of that. I'm on the field. I know my players. We had no shot of stopping Washington in that game. They had all the momentum. They keep marching down the field, marching down the field. When you have – that was the time that I want to die with Baker Mayfield, and I want the ball in his hands, and I'm going to say, hey, listen, guys, I'm going to call a timeout right now. I have three. I'm going to call a timeout. Let's talk about this fourth down. There's 4 minutes left in the game. The idea that they're going to at least get 3 points. You knew as soon as we kicked that field goal, Washington was getting at least 3 points, if not seven. You knew it. Everybody in the whole world knew it, except for Todd Bowles. In that moment – I'm bringing Liam Cohen over, and I said, get me your best play. Whatever play that you haven't used in this game. Give it to me. Fourth and three. Baker, the ball's yours. Go win the game for me.
They had just screwed up the two previous snaps.
Go win both the game for me.
Well, that's exactly why he did not go for it.
Sean, I'm going to say it again, and I dare you to disagree with me. I dare you.
Uh-oh.
28 out of the 31 other coaches would have kicked that field goal. I'm sorry. 28 out of 31. Why am I wrong? 28 out of 31 said, we got to tie this game up. I can't finish this drive with 0 points.
Are you sure it's not 23?
I think it's 27 or 28.
I'm so glad you brought this up. And this is going to tie into the draft. This is a wonderful segue. I'm going to tell you why. Because those other 28 teams that you're saying kick a field goal, I guarantee they have a pass rusher on their team that can close the game out.
Not a bad response, Sean.
Okay. That is a good response.
Let me explain to you what a closer is, Ira. Everybody talks about, well, the Bucs get enough sacks to be competitive. It's not about that. There's a reason why in baseball the closer comes out in the ninth, because he shuts the game down. We don't have that guy. We had that guy in Shaq Barrett and JPP and Warren Sapp. They would get a sack
Rice.
When the other team was coming. Simeon Rice, who was one of my personal favorites. I'm sorry, Simeon, for leaving you out. So when the game is on the line, there's that closer that comes out, like a Hutchinson, right, a Boza,
a Watt.
T.J. Watt, George Glaufis for Kansas City. Keep in mind that I was all about drafting
He's
him.
A good player.
Bucks
He's
fans,
good player.
You guys all gave me crap about it on the emails because we traded down, and I said, You have Kloftis there. He's a pass rusher at Purdue. He can do the job. He's got the length and the size.
Great motor.
And guess what? All he's done is dominate since he's been in the NFL and won championships. But anyway, he also dominated the last playoff game. He had three sacks in the game. Anyway, just a small little pat on the back for myself on that one.
So giving Bowles a pass because you're saying he doesn't have that guy.
I'm not giving him a pass. What I'm saying is you know you don't have a closer. You don't pull your starter out if you don't have a closer. There's nobody that's going to get that sack that we need at the end of the game.
You're right.
That ends the game. How many times did we watch Bucks defenses end the game when the other team could have won? They're marching back, and on 2nd and 10, the sack came, and now it's 3rd and 17, and the game's over because you knew that's the way it was going to go. So,
Sean has spoken, Ira. Now,
good answer, Sean. Good answer.
So you like the answer?
Yeah, good answer.
You like the answer.
As they said in Animal House, he's on a roll.
Now, I don't want to – it's possible. I don't know if this would ever come from an offensive coordinator, but it's possible after the two screw-ups, it's possible Liam Cohen was on the headset and just said, just fucking kick it, Todd. It's possible.
And we're going to regroup.
And we'll never know.
Yeah.
So that's something there, too. I hope that wasn't the case, but it is possible.
My example, similar to Sean's, and I'll keep it very short, was the Kansas City game. Talk about momentum. You had momentum. You had a nice comeback. You had a chance to win the game with that assassin wearing number 15 on the other sideline, and you choose to set
Sean,
him up.
Sean, that game bugged you too? Not going for two?
What do you think?
Sean.
Great answer.
All right, before we turn to a couple of things that the Bucks might be targeting and looking
Maybe
at.
Getting a closer at 19.
There you go. In 10 seconds, what is your favorite current offer right now at Bill Curry Ford?
The four-door Bronco that we have left in stock. We have about 15 four-door Broncos. They're extremely popular. I literally just got one for my son, his 16th birthday.
2024s, Sean?
A 24, yeah. I have brand new ones left. They're leasing for $345 a month. You know, with starts and taxes down, I think that's one of the best leases in the country, as well as the electric Mach-E with at least under $300 a month to drive a brand new Ford vehicle. I think those are driving down pricing to help people maintain their budgets and everything, and at a time where every penny is necessary.
All right, Sean went over by 20 seconds, but they're all at BillCurryFord.com.
Yeah, that's a win for me.
You can see them, right? That's a win, yeah. See, he knew there was no closer on this end. He went after
it. That was a hell of an answer by Sean on that they don't have the closer. That was very good.
So, Sean, we're here in the Bill Curry Ford Studios, a mile north of the stadium at the beautiful Bill Curry Ford dealership. What does everybody have to know about what's going on right now at Bill Curry Ford?
We are ending January with our leftovers from 2024. I have about 100 vehicles left that are discounted up to $20,000 off. I mean, we have some really great deals right now. Still dealing with the hurricane fallout. There's a lot of people that are still fighting their insurance companies to get diminished value and to get the proper value for their car that was totaled in the hurricane. And I want to let you know that I personally get involved, call the insurance companies with the customer, help them get the best value for their car so that I can then sell them a car, and then they become a customer of Bill Curry Ford forever.
I mean, that's
kind of like what I do.
When you said leftovers, Ira perked up. He loves leftovers. Loves a good good sandwich.
Yeah, well, right before the podcast, Steve, Ira's down there at the Bronco Brunchery.
Absolutely.
How was your lunch, Ira?
It was fantastic. I told the guy, wherever you're getting this bread, don't change a thing. It's fantastic. And the bread makes the sandwich, Sean. So your people are doing a fantastic job right here in the showroom.
It's very kind of you, Ira. So we're also continuing for 2025, we're also continuing free pickup and delivery and free mobile service to your home. So if you have a recall announced, nobody wants to open the mail and see that recall
right.
coming from that whatever
right.
brand it is. And then you look at it and you're like, oh, man, I don't have time to go get this done. And you put it on the kitchen table and you don't get the recall done. Well, what we do is we will send a mobile unit to your home, even on Saturday, you know, while you're home with your kids, not interrupting your business or your life. We'll fix the recall right in your driveway. And then for free.
And there's no charge.
There is zero charge. And then if you want me just to pick it up and bring it to Curry, if you would prefer, hey, I don't want business. My neighborhood has really weird neighbors, as everybody has these weird neighbors that tell on you with your homeowners association when you do anything. You leave a trash can out one day. If that's okay, if you just want it picked up, we'll go for free, pick up your car, leave a loaner in the driveway with the keys in it, bring your car back, fix the recall, and then take it back for you.
Unbelievable. I almost want my car to break down.
Yeah.
That is a fantastic initiative.
Sean, Bill Curry Ford, as we always say, family-owned makes a difference since 1960. And any last words for the good folks of Tampa Bay as it relates to the dealership, not your passion for the draft?
As it relates to the dealership, I have a very exciting news that the new construction permit for Ford Pro Elite, which is going to be the largest commercial truck center in the South. So we're adding to the largest service department, the biggest service drive, 67 cars deep in the country. We're now adding the ability to work on vehicles the size of semi-trucks. So we're going to be able to really help individual businesses, not just family-owned businesses, which is my first priority, is the family-owned businesses. I will help the corporations, but they come second. But when their trucks break down or Publix needs a truck on a route, we'll be able to substitute a truck to Publix so they can keep delivering their bread to the people that want to buy bread in the morning. And then while we're working on their car here, we'll work up onto vehicles as high as 9,000s, which are our semi-trucks all the way down to
nice.
To 250.
So there's very
I'm
few
very
dealerships that do
it.
That, right?
Wait until you see what it looks like. Beautiful.
Creating jobs, another thing for Bill Curry Ford, BillCurryFord.com.
Oh,
all right, so Ira, look, do you have any strong feeling? I don't know if anybody really does, and I say this because with the offensive coordinator hire, that's probably coming. I would guess there's going to be an offer made by the end of the week, maybe by the day that this podcast goes, because what would the Bucks be waiting for? Who are they going to start pulling out of the sky here? But my point is, Ira, that, and we sort of touched on it in a different way last podcast, and you said it yourself, can this offense be screwed up? Pieces that
it
you
was
have.
A little bit of a rhetorical question.
And you probably got a couple more pieces coming, some refinement there. And they just average 29.5 points a game. So whoever comes in has a tremendous bar.
Yeah.
Isn't going to be able to get credit like Dave Canales did for resurrecting Mayfield or Cohen, taking him to a new level. Where's Mayfield going? Is he going to throw 50 touchdowns and 75% completion rate? So it's a different mindset. Do you have a strong feeling right now about who they bring in?
Sean, to me, the key is the guy doesn't have to be a wizard. You don't have to be a wizard. You got talent. You've got skills. This is a top five offensive line. When's the last time we said that about the Tampa Bay Buccaneers? They're a top five offensive line. And they're young. Sean, the old man is 26. That's it. Nobody passed that. If they lose Bredesen, so be it. It's still going to be a good offensive
line. We're not going to lose Bredesen.
I like it. So, Sean, if they take the guy from the Rams, I'm okay with it. I think Cone's laid a good foundation. I think Irving was the whole key to the offense. I just do. I think he was a one-man wrecking crew in terms of resuscitating the worst ground game in the league. You don't have to make great blocks for Bucky Irving. Just give him a crevice. And I love the fact, Sean, he ripped off 40-yard runs every freaking week.
He's a superstar. I mean, he's a legitimate.
I mean, 1,600 yards from scrimmage for a guy who didn't have a lot of touches the first half of the season?
I mean, I think next year you're going to see him talked about with the Saquons and the King Henrys. I mean, I think he's going to have that kind of impact.
So I don't think you need a wizard at offensive
And we'll have him from day one, from week one. We'll have him from week one opening day. We'll see what he can do. If he's at 5.6 yards a carry, he's going to
I think it's hard to screw this offense up at this point.
All right. You planted your flag.
So I got a question.
Go ahead.
So just so I, on that one, if that is true, if what he's saying is true, then
it's
why
the sage, of course it's true.
Okay, well, let's just say the sage is 100% right, which he normally is, right? Why are we not giving more consideration to the two offensive assistants that are already here that know the offense, that know the play call? We wouldn't have to change much, right? We could change some terminology so that the defenses can't pick it up, but we could run a very similar offense to what Liam Cohen. We paid for him to have an offensive assistant, did we not? He had a guy that was in his back pocket for the whole year, right? That knows the entire offense. Then you had Thad Lewis, right, which is being interviewed by another team. I don't know.
He went to Houston. He had some other calls for interviews
as
well.
So here's a guy that's in-house that's being interviewed.
I'm not against the in-house guys. I don't know if they can lead an offense, be the boss. I don't know. Not everybody can be the boss.
I know that. I meant scheme-wise, schematic-wise. Yeah. Instead of having to change our entire scheme with whoever's coming in, wouldn't it be easier? Could we just run the same type of offense that Liam Cohen ran last year and promote somebody within? Is that not an option?
If everything's even, that should be an option, but I don't think everything's even.
Okay. Mayfield says, let's go with Thad Lewis. I think they're going to do it. I think they're going to do it. That's I think it's fair. All about Mayfield at this point.
The Rams offense is not like going from a wishbone to an NFL offense.
You think that Mayfield wants somebody from the outside?
I don't know what Mayfield wants.
We don't know that, Sean. We don't know that.
How well do you know this offensive assistant that Liam Cohen had last year? How well do you know him, the coach?
Grizzard?
I just know by his resume, and his resume looks thin to me.
He's young. What is he, 29?
34.
Oh, is he 30? Like, yeah. He looks like a child.
But yeah, I same that. With the Steelhouse yeah. guy. But I'm sorry. People can throw rocks at me. I don't give a damn. If you worked for Adam Gase, I want nothing to do with you.
He has weird eyes.
Is this the same? Oh, no, it's this Kaylee guy they're talking about. Oh, he worked for Bill Belichick. Do we really need to go down that road? I mean, I got nothing against these guys. I trust Light and Bowles. They have a track record for hiring offensive coordinators. I trust what those guys do. But compared to a Shieldhouse, for example, I think these guys' resumes are thin.
Well, Sean, the bottom line is, well, those guys, nobody really knows if they can lead or if they can call plays. So everybody who talks about them in that realm is just guessing.
And you could also say the same thing to a degree with Shieldhouse.
At least he has experience. He did it in college. Yeah,
at least he has experience as offensive coordinator.
Two quick ones, same topic. One, your confidence level, Lavonne David will be back. And two, did he lose a step last season?
One, I mean, I can only hope that he comes back, because if you look at what we have in the cover.
You don't want to think about him not coming.
I don't want to think about our team without him on it.
I've got his email address. I could email him while we're on the podcast.
He is just every single thing that represents Tampa and our city and our people and our blue collar, you know, work ethic. Like, he's everything that I've ever wanted in a linebacker. He deserves the Hall of Fame. You know, he deserves a lot of things. And I would love to see him come back. And I know I didn't think that he lost a step. He always missed some tackles. Like, I know we always held him to such a standard where, oh gosh, he's lost a step because he missed a couple of tackles in the Washington game. But he's always overrun some tackles. He's never been 100% sure of a tackle. He's just usually in position. I didn't see him out of position in a lot of those games. I thought he was in position to make plays. So when somebody loses a step, it's usually when we saw Derek Brooks lose a step. That's a losing a step. And that's nothing against Derek Brooks. He's your friend. He's a friend of everybody in Tampa. What I'm saying is, when he had that hamstring injury.
Yes, it was obvious.
It was bad. This is not what I see in Lavonte David. I think he has another year. And by the way, if we bring in a rookie, which, again, this is another segue, but if we bring in a rookie, you know, like Jihad Campbell, we talked about him out of Alabama, we bring somebody like him in to play Mike, he's going to need somebody like Devontae just for 1 year to, like, show a star linebacker.
That's a great point.
You know,
great
what
point.
He can what he can do.
By the way, Campbell without Alabama, is it Shihad? Because I always pronounced it Shihad, and I kind of like that with a linebacker, so Shihad.
So it's spelled Jihad.
Okay.
Right?
Like,
right.
I want to see a linebacker.
I've heard it with no J, with no H. And then Campbell. So it depends on where you go to hear it. If you go to Google and you ask him to pronounce it.
Well, what I do know is that Ira would see him and just call him, JC, come over here.
I just like the fact that you would have a linebacker. His name is Jihad.
Sean, you servant. Think the Bucs are locked in to get an edge rusher with the first round draft pick? You think so, Light feels he's in a straitjacket?
Well, forget about what Light feels. Let's just send it to Sean this way because Light doesn't even know who's coming back to his team.
Give me three guys they can take at 19,
Sean. I know we're
going to
talk about this all summer, so I know. Let's just touch on a couple of names to give them a couple of names, right?
Okay. The East-West Shrine game is coming up,
right,
as is the Senior Bowl. Sean, right, who's a few edge rushers that people need to look at? And can you tell Ira if one of these guys is maybe fits the Light mold?
Okay, so Mike Green out of Marshall, right? 6'3", former wide receiver, had 17.5 sacks last year, has 4 pass rushing moves, right? Has dominated the Senior Bowl yesterday.
That's 3 more than Joe Tryon-Shoyinka.
Three more?
That,
you mean
that's,
for his
that's
entire
three
career?
More pass rushing moves.
Moves.
Oh, 3 more.
Then
I thought you meant sacks. He had 17.5 sacks. So everybody goes, well, he played at Marshall, but he actually showed up against Ohio State, some of the bigger schools.
So did Randy Moss.
This is a real pass rusher with real twitch. Lee, we're not going to talk about developing a pass rusher. All I want to do is draft a pass rusher that from day one can get to the quarterback. Not in pass coverage. I don't want him guarding Eckler down the field. I just want him to put a hand in the ground like this on a four-point stance and just go after the quarterback, right? That we need a closer. You know, Green is one that I was going to talk about. And then James Pierce Jr., I think, is a phenomenal talent out of Tennessee. And this is a guy that's had 9.5 sacks, 7.5 sacks this past year. He was considered to be possibly the first pick or the second pick last year in the draft had he come out. It was a quarterback draft, so he decided – I'll let the quarterbacks all go because we had, and I was correct last year when I said that it was going to be the biggest quarterback year ever, and it was. And all those quarterbacks right now look like they're all franchise quarterbacks. So we'll see how that goes, which would be different than 83.
Could they both be realistically there at 19?
Yes.
Realistically.
Yes. Now,
Mike Green, really? At 19?
Well, remember, he started out. If you're going to laugh at how the draft works. I mean, you guys all know. I'm not telling you anything you don't know. He started out as a second round draft
really?
Pick to start the week. And now they're saying first round draft pick. And now they're saying late first round.
Because he needs to put on weight. I put this on Twitter, and I guess people didn't catch the sarcasm. I retweeted it with the sarcasm tag. But I could just envision a meeting that Light has with Todd Bowles, and Light starts telling about this Mike Green. And the very first thing out of Bowles' mouth is, can he cover Drake London?
That's tough, Lee. That's a tough.
That was
it's awfully tough to watch.
I laughed at it.
Say, go to Twitter, search Mike Green. What you're going to see is his pancaking of an offensive lineman in one-on-one drills,
yeah.
Which you don't hear that phrase often from a defensive end, but he literally flattens the guy
funny thing is,
at the Senior Bowl. So that
rush.
Went viral. So he's yeah. just that one video is going to make
him.
It's going to make him a fan first round pick. Whether he really is in front offices will be very interesting. But that video.
I hope he's there at 19, just because he's a very polished pass rusher for who he is coming out. Typically, you develop pass rushers in the NFL. That's typically the way it works.
Mm-hmm.
But in this particular team, like you could take James Pierce Jr., right, and put him in day one and just say, hey, go eat, you know, go hunt, right?
Yeah, go hunt.
That's a guy that doesn't need much help. He's physically gifted. He's got pass rushing moves. He's dominated the SEC. He's led the team in tackles for loss. This is a guy that plays the backfield, plays the run. Todd Bowles would love that because the guy's eats the run up. Mike Green, not so good against the run, right?
But but
he's a pass rusher.
He's not good enough for Bowles.
He played Shaq Barrett all those years.
And then I touched on Campbell, the linebacker of Alabama, who was my favorite linebacker. If you're going to have a first-round linebacker.
What was the name again?
Jihad, whatever.
He keeps saying Jihad. He's got me saying it. Jihad Campbell.
It's like Kaufman. If you say it long enough, you change Ira's name.
Well, I get these emails like, Sean, you mispronounce names all the time. These guys don't understand. I do this all from memory. When I talk for 30 minutes on my podcast, it's just me talking.
I don't have
a pronunciation guide. And then when you have all of these players in your head, like I'm sitting
here
thinking
about
Don't Lamar Thomas was a wide receiver we drafted with Jameel Green out of Florida, you know, back in the day when our quarterback was a Florida State quarterback named, Casey. So
Weldon?
Yeah, Casey Weldon. So my point is all these names are stuck in my head. So sometimes they do come out wrong.
Is this guy a run stuffer or a cover guy, Sean?
Cover, run, and can rush the passer. He is, to me, he's a complete linebacker in the form of famous linebackers like Derek Brooks and Levante David. He's going to be another – he would be in that
– like a Roquan Smith type?
Very similar. Yeah, correct. I mean, this guy's an
off-the-ball
linebacker. Here's the thing is, what is the value of an off-the-ball linebacker in today's NFL? You don't know. This is a guy that 10 years ago, 15 years ago, would be a top 10 pick.
Now it's devalued.
Correct. Yeah. Corner, right? So if you're not going to have a pass rush, let's just say they don't go pass rush in the first round.
Or they use one in free agency. Or they pick one up in free agency. Let's say.
Okay, I'll hold my breath on that.
All right.
So let's say we need a better corner. We need to upgrade our corners. Benjamin Morrison is a guy that we've talked about. A lot of people have talked about. He was going to be a top 10 pick out of Notre Dame corner. Ball hawk, 7-interception guy, unbelievable number one. He's projected to be like a Sauce Garner.
7 interceptions. That'll match the Bucks total for 2024.
Notre Dame guy, right?
Yeah, Notre Dame guy.
Yeah, who covered Chris Olave like a blanket.
Right, he is projected to be like a Sauce Garner. He's a little – he's the same size as Sauce. He's a little smaller guy.
I'm sorry, not Chris Olave, Harrison. He covered Harrison like a blanket.
Marvin Harrison Jr. Yeah. He's the one that was famously – that covered him in the
All right,
the
so another guy to watch
right.
in the Lou Holtz
but
game.
He's not my favorite guy because he's coming off of injury and he's on the smaller side, right? Which I understand. Like, we need ball hawks. We need guys that can get the ball and intercept the ball.
Give us one more guy to watch this
Darian
weekend.
Porter out of Iowa State. 6'3", low 200s, ripped, right? Ran a 4.38. We don't know what he's going to run at the combine.
6'3", corner?
Yeah, 6'3", corner. He's got 33-inch arms, so he's going to have that.
So he's Jamel Dean is what you're saying.
He's Jamel Dean.
Yeah.
And you know that Todd Bowles
He really loves the long corners. He's got to have
this
them long.
This guy can play the
McCollum.
Run.
McCollum, right?
This guy can play the run, and then if he's behind, he can get his arms around and knock the ball down. But this guy's a physical first-round corner. You know, I like him a lot just because he plays with physicality.
So we'll get
I think
to see him in the Senior Bowl?
Yes.
All right. Sage, I know you got to get home to watch the Pro Bowl games. First is tonight, Thursday.
Oh my goodness!
Well, you know, you'll see if this the flag football, you know, the skills and all that. I know you like all that. You get your food laid out. I'll ask you a final question, and we'll say now a fantastic goodbye to Sean Sullivan.
I got one question for Sean before.
Sure.
You
yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, go ahead.
On Saturday, there's a Senior Bowl Saturday, right, Sean?
Yep.
So, do you already have it worked out with your wife? Like, here's $500. Get rid of the kids.
So, you know, I don't always watch this stuff in real time because of my schedule.
Okay.
So what I do is if I have something going on or busy, I just record everything. And then when I know when my wife goes to bed, which is usually she's an early sleeper. She goes at like 9:30. She's out. The kids are, you know, the kids are getting grown. So they kind of just disappear. I don't know where they are, you know. And then I'll sit there till 2 or 3 in the morning just watching tape.
So that's what I was going to do. He's going to wait for Carrie to go to sleep, and he'll watch the Pro Bowl game.
I got one more comment to make to Sean, not a question, before we let him go. First of all, we appreciate you joining us, Sean. It's always entertaining and informative. If I could go in a time machine, and no, I don't want to go back to the 17th century. All I want to do is go back to the Washington game. And when Austin Eckler caught that ball coming out the left flank on a critical play, and the only guy that was near him was Yaya Diaby. I wish I was sitting with Sean Sullivan right at that moment to see whether it was a sneaker or a cup. He threw something at his TV screen, and I wish I would have been there for Sean Sullivan on that particular play.
That was not a good point for me. I mean, that was a low point in the game for me.
That was third down, right, Steve? That was third down, I believe.
I got to say, Yaya was right there. He just didn't make the play.
Again, it was a wheel route from one of the fastest running backs in the NFL, and we have a 3-4 outside linebacker trying to run with him.
Steve's right. He did the best he could.
Yeah, he did.
But he was a step back.
His long arms, I mean, he literally was a step away from breaking that, from getting that play taken care of. Anyway, it was a very important part of the game, and it really cost us in having that happen. But again, we didn't have linebacker depth. Yaya seems to be faster than any linebacker we had besides David. I mean, if you think about it, and he's not designed to do that, right? But who are you going to put? I mean, who was the J.J. Russell? Is he running around there? You got a guy, V. Jones, that took a year to figure out our defense.
That still cracks me.
You're going to ask Anthony Nelson to cover him?
You signed Deion Jones, and he didn't play. So, I mean, who's K.J. Britt's not running with Eckler? So I guess he's like, hey – I guess Kansi would have been a better choice. I guess we could have had Kansi running out
there. Is anybody going to say, hey, maybe our inside linebackers coach isn't very good? Is anybody going to say that? You know, I don't know if they think that way at $1. You know how it goes with the loyalty and some of that stuff.
All right, what's your question?
All right, my last one for you, Ira. And again, Sean, thanks for joining us.
My pleasure, guys.
We'll be with you. Fun stuff. We'll be looking out for your podcast breakdowns. When you fire up and peak draft season.
Senior Bowl and East-West Shrine Game wrap-up. You know, the players that succeeded, I'll be doing that. That'll be releasing next week.
BillCurryFord.com. You can find Sean at his part-time job here at Bill Curry Ford. when he's not draft guruing, he's here.
Their initiatives are extraordinary.
A mile north of the stadium on Dale Mabry. My last question for you, Ira. I'm even going to shut off Sean's microphone here. You've been unplugged, Sean.
What if he wants to weigh in on this answer?
No, I'm not even going to weigh in. I'm just going to ask you. Mike Evans, we're going to – Lee can weigh in. Lee's approved to weigh in. This is you and Lee.
All right.
Mike Evans, we're going to see him at the Pro Bowl this weekend. Great season. The Buccaneers came out a year ago saying, Mike Evans, Buccaneer for life, Buccaneer for life. He's a Buccaneer for life. The team kept saying, not just fans, team kept saying Buccaneer for life. All I know is that was a bunch of nonsense. He enters this season in the final year of his contract. Are they going to extend him to avoid what you saw with your own eyes, Evans not looking too happy about not getting a new contract? What do you think happens there? You think they do anything to maybe extend Evans, really make him a Buccaneer for life, and give themselves some cap room to play with?
I don't know how many more years Mike Evans wants to play. For me, he looks like a pretty young 31-year-old. I would extend him another year. I'm not going to give him a 3-year extension, but I'd extend him another year and then, you know, play it as it goes. He can't go on forever, and I think it's fair to say, Lee, that at his age, while he's still extremely productive, he's more prone to injury, and he doesn't recover from injuries the same as when he was 22. So, you know, I want him to be a Buck, and I want him to finish his career as a Buck. I think he'll play 2 or 3 more years tops in the NFL, I think.
The key element you said was doesn't recover as quickly. That's a very good point. He's going to be 32 next season. That's up there for a receiver.
It is.
That's up there. Was his contract up this year, 2025?
2025 is his final year.
I'd have to see, like midway through the season possibly, but I know what Steve's talking about. Rework his deal now so you have money to play with to bring some defenders in.
I'd like to clear his mind before the season starts and give him another one.
That's fair.
We like when you have a clear mind, Ira, and we'll see you next time.